The Israel Report with Rolien Marx.
Rolien Marx, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Simon. It looks like, you know, this morning started, as we very often do, with very little news, but some very interesting developments over the course of the afternoon, and that is between Israel and Lebanon. So if you are playing normalization bingo.
Yes.
It is time to get out the scorecard because it looks like something interesting is happening. And let me put us in the picture. Over the last couple of years, I would say, Israel and Lebanon have been in very, very tense discussions over maritime borders and a little bit of a disputed land border. And today, an agreement was reached. And this followed a discussion you and I had offline about whether or not Lebanon might be one of the next countries to move towards normalization or some kind of talks with Israel. And today's agreement is a significant step forward. In fact, this has been welcomed not just by the U.S. State Department, but this has also been welcomed by everybody. Please clutch your pearls, hang on to your seats. The United Nations, UNIFIL troops or interim forces in Lebanon have said that they will do everything in their power to facilitate and to help in any way. That is not something that you hear every day.
It's certainly not, but it's certainly something I do not understand. I understand the imperative of peace for Lebanon because at the end of the day, Haifa Port is what, 3-4 hours away. You can get food in and the economy is stuffed. What I don't understand is Hezbollah is such a powerful force in Lebanon whose sole raison d'etre is to destroy Israel. So explain to me, who's doing the talking? What is this?
Well, it's definitely not Hezbollah doing the talking, that much we know. But there have been international lawyers that have been negotiating on behalf of the Lebanese. And I think that Lebanon and certainly the Lebanese people have realized after the tragic blast in Beirut just a couple of weeks ago, just how destructive a power Lebanon, Hezbollah is, and it certainly gave them the impetus to react to Hezbollah and to say, you know what, this is not what we want in our country. We realize that we are also being basically used as human shields because let's not forget that hiding your explosive in and amongst your civilian population makes your civilian population human shields. And very interestingly, and you and I didn't get to chat about it yesterday, but we can certainly chat about it today. This is an issue that the PM addressed in his speech to the UNGA the other night. You know, just before he gave his speech, we got an alert as journalists from the government press office that Netanyahu was going to reveal some or other kind of information about Hezbollah in Lebanon. And we cannot forget that Hezbollah is an Iranian-sponsored terror proxy, a terror proxy that is being voted out and recognized as such by country after country. One of the most recent countries being Switzerland, which is very interesting because we normally look at Switzerland as politically neutral in global geopolitics. But this is what is happening. And the Prime Minister announced in his speech, and he showed with a prop, and I know we joke about whether or not we are going to see any any kind of
props
in this one. I forgot my terminology there for a second because I can see the image in my head. But he explained in absolute precise coordinates where they were holding their ammonium and their missile silos and just how close gas stations, gas refineries, and even the airport are. And he actually called on the Lebanese people to protest, which is interesting because I don't think the Prime Minister is a big fan of protests right now. But he really said to them, he said, "Is Lebanese people, Israel means you no harm, but you know, you cannot live with a potential tragedy on your doorstep as it is."
Quite incredible. And so, Hamor weighing in, Rolene, saying normalization with Lebanon, I simply don't believe that's actually possible. Kind of echoing what I was said. It's such a split society. It's quite incredible. Maybe this economic need is forcing certain decisions.
Well, I think, you know, our Lebanese neighbors are also looking at the region, and they're looking at the discussion that is happening between Israel and her neighbors, and they've seen the trajectory, and they've seen and experienced firsthand just how much a threat to the region Iran is. You know, yes, it is wishful thinking that they'll wake up and say, you know, we want Lebanon out, but understand that these are people that are overrun by a terror organization that wreaks havoc. If we look at what state-sponsored terror groups like Hamas do to their civilian populations in places like Gaza, imagine what they do in Lebanon as well, where you've got Hezbollah, very, very large part of the socio-economic landscape there.
Well, we watch that space with intense interest.
As we were beginning to talk about normalization, we heard from the Lebanese president at the time saying that he is not adverse to talks with Israelis. And, you know, in the Middle East, where symbolism is everything, we cannot detract from the importance of these kinds of comments as you know, not important as people outside of our region think they are. You know, when you understand how the language and how symbolism works here, you will understand that things that you might seem as insignificant or small are actually very, very impactful and big over here.
A story that I haven't seen anything about, Rolene, I'm so glad you found this one. Israel and Belgium headed into troubled waters. What is that all about?
Well, this is a very, very interesting and very worrying development. I think that as we see the Middle East open up to Israel, we're seeing very, very little positive response on this from the Europeans. And perhaps they feel that they are being shoved out. But Belgium has been a concern for a couple of years, in particular on issues of anti-Semitism. And we've heard from representatives or members of the Belgian Jewish community warning that the incoming government perhaps could take hostilities or tension between the two countries to a whole new level. In fact, she said that, you know, the incoming government would have people who are vehemently opposed to Israel or vehemently critical of Israel occupy some very, very significant high-level portfolios. And the person goes on to say, and this is an advisor on issues pertaining to Israel and pertaining to the Jewish community, goes on to say that what little dialogue is still left could be halted for a while, or at least until a new government came into play.
Wow, that is interesting. Important. I just saw a statement by the Europeans last night, and they seemed all quite united in their stance. I didn't know that Belgium was taking this different approach to Israel. Absolutely fascinating. And talking about diplomats getting into trouble, the Uruguayan foreign minister to be removed.
Yeah, well, I might have written that wrong on the sheet this morning, but I always do these things before my second cup of coffee. The Uruguayan foreign minister has dismissed the director general of his ministry for voting on a resolution on the 14th of September that blamed Israel for the status of a woman in the territory, saying that it was Israel that is perpetually violating their rights. But Director General Pablo Sader has been dismissed by the foreign minister, who says that Uruguay remains committed to its stance that they stand in support and in solidarity with the state of Israel, and that this voting and a record of this, and I actually heard from Hillel Noyer early today through social media, who said, you know, once UN Watch had highlighted that this was a step away from the usual policy that Uruguay follows, they took very, very swift and decisive action.
Ro, we're going to be a little bit late, but I think we have to, because this is too important not to discuss your dismal, unacceptable, awful COVID stat.
Do we have to? Yes, we do, because it is very, very topical. We've had statistics at nearly 9,000 over the last 24 hours, and I think everybody is at their wit's end. You know, we really try not to blame certain sectors of society, but, you know, we also have to look at the stats. Very frustrating that Sukkot are being built for large communal gatherings, especially at a time when many of us are unable to be with family and friends because we're observing the lockdown laws. Professor Gumsu asked earlier today for the fines to be drastically increased in the amount of money people would be fined. And he's actually threatened to quit, saying, you know, he and the Prime Minister are at loggerheads. And very interesting, Simon, is who is that man that people want to replace him? Well, the man that people want to replace him is my own mayor, Chaim Bibas. He has got the vote of confidence from 100 local authorities. I don't know if we in Modi Inn and our two smaller areas, Makabim and Riut, are very happy to give up our mayor. But, you know, he is known for his leadership skills and his organizational skills. And he is the one that at least 100 local authorities who manage dealing with the virus in various cities and towns has been recommended as the man who takes over as the czar.
Rolene Marks, we're out of time, but as normal, it was well worth it. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you, and we will chat again on Monday. Monday,
we will indeed.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.